Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. I'm a writer.
And I'm a professional artist.
And this is your weekly discussion of comics and other pulp culture. Your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 22. Welcome.
Do you have a name?
I'm Robbie Dorman.
And I'm Eric Z. Goodnight.
Woohoo!
Thank you for that cock rock scream there. That's pretty good. Are we getting the band back together? We had to bring it back to Dr. Feelgood.
Dr. Feelgood. He's the one you call.
Yeah. He's going to make you feel all right.
All right.
Yes.
So, yeah, folks, this is episode 22. Eric and I have seen each other, like, all weekend long, so we're probably going to be a little...
Not sick of each other yet.
I don't
somehow.
Know. We're going to be a little punchy, probably, towards the end.
Maybe.
But other than that, we're good.
We've been cuddling all weekend.
We have been. We've been caressing our beards.
It is. It's been very beardy.
Beardy times. We're going to... It's a good episode, I think. You think it's going to be a good episode, Eric?
It's always a good episode.
I have a cat next to me. They missed me. I was gone all weekend, and Eric was too. He doesn't have any cats, so.
I'm glad. We should interview the cat.
I'm not sure she would have much to contribute to a comic book podcast.
It's a cat. Why do you have kitten breath? That's not very insightful.
No, it's not. So, let's jump into checking in.
You going to check in for me?
Well, we're both going to have very similar things, I think.
Well, I've got things that you didn't do, but...
I have things you didn't do.
Wow.
I know.
It's almost like we sort of live separate lives.
Sort of. Kind of. A little bit. But we can talk about shared things as well.
Let's start with our shared experience.
Of the Bacon Festival. It was kind of underwhelming, to be honest.
That's what I was going to say. I think all the crowd got drawn to it, and they're going to be like, oh, bacon, oh, it's awesome. It's like,
Here's some bacon. It's not bad.
Yeah.
But then you have to buy, like, bacon dollars?
Yeah, buying, like, tickets to get things. I don't know. I guess they don't want the vendors to handle money or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so there was an entrance. You had to pay to get in, even though you could have easily gotten in without buying a ticket.
Yes, you could just, you know,
sneak
through a hole in the fence,
or go in through the exit. No one was stopping anyone from doing it. And then when you're inside the Bacon Festival, you have to buy a representative amount of bacon dollars. So you give them 10 real dollars, they give you bacon dollars in return. Which, of course, is good only inside the Bacon Festival.
They don't even smell like bacon or nothing.
And there's no exchange rate or anything. I mean, and then you have to spend your bacon dollars on things.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the food was good.
Why don't you tell us about some of the insane things that you ate? I didn't eat hardly anything.
I had chocolate-covered bacon. Get that order correct.
Yes.
It was good.
It's not bacon-covered chocolate.
Not bacon-covered chocolate. That's next time. Also, we got a good amount of free samples of bacon, which was good. You know, it was bacony.
A man named Larry gave me bacon.
Man named Larry.
He didn't react well when I said his name. Nor when I memorized it and repeated it on a podcast.
Larry fucking hates you now.
Larry's a shitbag.
Fucking Larry. And I had a bacon... caramel something something whoopie pie.
It's a whoopie pie.
There's other things in it. I can't remember.
We call them moon pies where I'm from.
Well, yeah. It's a moon pie too. They're the same thing, different names. But
yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like, if you happen to be from
where Eric is from,
yes,
there it's could also be called a moon pie. It's two cookies with cream in the middle, and then whatever you change about all those ingredients, that's the gist of it. But there was bacon on it. It was good. No, I don't think it's $3 good. Three bacon dollars good. I had
the exchange rate is still roughly a dollar.
Yeah. Bacon fat chocolate chip cookies. They're
good.
How
was that? You didn't really talk about it much.
It was good. I mean, but it wasn't like anything. I mean, it was a good chocolate chip cookie. But it was only a dollar. So that was really good. It was a big cookie for $1, which inside the festival, that's a good exchange. And then I also got like a bacon BLT biscuit, which was very good. That was the best thing I got.
That you were talking about for hours.
Yeah, that was excellent. I would have eaten about 10 of those things probably if I had enough bacon dollars. What else did I get? Did I get anything else? I don't think I did. And I gave away my last dollar because I didn't want another cookie.
You should have eaten another cookie. You should have been a terrible person and eaten another cookie.
I was terrible enough this weekend, as you will attest.
Yeah, it is. I was very judgy.
But I
judged you a lot.
It's okay.
I ate a plate of fat.
You did. You did eat a plate of fat.
And I was curious why I got sick in the middle of it. What was that place in Orlando we went to?
Four Rivers. Barbecue.
So when you go to the brisket carving guy and you say, "Give me the fattest piece of brisket you can," and he says, "Challenge accepted," I think you might be in for it. And that's what happened. True story.
Yeah. I mean, it was that simple.
It was.
It was that simple. I got pulled pork and sides, and they were delicious.
There we go.
It was good.
So we sent a lot of animals to heaven together.
We did this weekend, unfortunately.
Those poor animals.
Poor pigs. Mostly pigs. And a cow.
Yeah. And a cow.
And a cow. And I played board games. Eric watched.
I watched indignantly.
And played Final Fantasy Tactics.
I was going to check in with that.
Well, now you have your segue.
So do I check in with it now? Or are you going to talk about board games for 40 minutes?
Talk about Final Fantasy Tactics.
Well, I have it emulated on my cell phone telephone device.
Your e-phone?
My e-phone. My little magic computer that I carry with me everywhere. Anyway, as I might have told you, Roberto, it is one of my all-time favorite games. It's like, I don't know. It goes back and forth for the number one slot, like it or Chrono Trigger.
Both very excellent games.
Yeah, but Final Fantasy Tactics, a lot of people didn't enjoy it because it's a very, like, it's so packed with content. Like, it's just such a dense game, and the fighting system is so, it's like arcane. It's very difficult. It's hard to jump into. And like but every fight takes like 15 minutes to get through. And by the time you get to the third or fourth story battle, it's like so impossibly hard if you've never, you know, it's your first playthrough. Like the third stage is so hard that I think most people will just give it up forever. But I don't know. I was very drawn to it when I was younger, and I've probably beaten it 10 times through, and I've just sort of picked it up again.
Yeah, I need to play through it.
I think you should.
I need to go back and do it.
It's all kinds of incredible, and I think that on a play mechanic level, I think you'll really enjoy it. I think you can let your sort of OCD nerdiness like really dive into that. It can get really fun. But in addition to that, it also has, even though there's some translation issues, just because there's so much text in this game.
Yeah.
I would say there's 2 to 3 times as much text in Final Fantasy Tactics as there is in Final Fantasy VII, which was contemporary to it. But it has one of the best stories in any video game I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, like, the main obstacle for me playing, like, I've tried to, like, I've gone, like, other times I've gone, like, I should really play that all the way through. And, but Square, like, has remade it multiple times. And if I wanted to get an actual, like, a legit copy for it,
mm-hmm.
it's $15.
Yeah.
On my phone, and then it's buggy, apparently. Like, I read all the reviews.
Oh, wow. You can get a, like, there's an actual, like, iOS app.
Yeah, an iOS, like, they made an iOS version of it for $15. Huh. And then all the reviews, oh, it's buggy, don't even bother.
That's amazing. So I don't recommend that.
Yeah.
But I own a real copy.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe this is my admission. I'm going to go to prison for this.
I don't think
but
so.
But I'm playing an emulated copy on my phone.
It's a backup.
It is.
Exactly.
I own a copy, and I've beaten it many times. I have like 14 saves.
I don't think there's anyone else left on Earth that has any kind of sympathy for Square mm-hmm. about how they've done with their older games, where they just like they remake them crappily.
Yeah.
And then charge an arm and a leg for a game that's what 15 years old, 20 years old at this point.
It seems like they have sort of lost their way. To be perfectly honest, they've not released anything that's been a blockbuster the way that any of their old stuff has been. I think they've kind of betrayed their base, and I don't know. Maybe their sales are still fine, but it seems like they've gone off on a dark path.
Yeah, I don't know. I know they've had some up and down years lately. They've had a lot of leadership changes.
Yeah,
in their corporate. I mean, it pops up every once in a while. They have a new CEO, new whatever, trying to do a new strategy. I'm like, make good games and don't charge so much for them. I have one other thing I'd like to talk about.
Lay it on me.
They just on Thursday, they just released a new Puzzle Quest game. Have you played any of the Puzzle Quest games, Eric?
I have never done that. I've always wanted to.
You'd like them.
I'm sure I would. They look awesome.
It's for those who are not familiar, Puzzle Quest series, there's Puzzle Quest and then Puzzle Quest 2, and there's also a Puzzle Quest Galactrix, it's called, which is set in space. But it's basically, you know, the same kind of puzzle match 3 mechanics, like Bejeweled, but it's also crossed up with an RPG. So you level up your characters and you have to, you know, collect a certain amount of mana, which is represented by the colors of the gems you're matching. And then you cast spells, which change the mechanics of the matching and, you know, it puts new gems out there, all kinds of stuff. But they released a new one that's Marvel superhero themed on Thursday. And I got some time with it on the ride home today. And I put a couple hours in.
Must be hard to drive and play Prison Quest.
Kim drove home.
I said Prison Quest. That's a different game.
That's the next one.
That's the game we're going to make.
Yeah, Prison Quest.
That's where you have to...
Match three cigarettes.
You have to shank some orcs.
Match three shanks. Shivs. Match three shower heads. Yeah. Three bars of soap.
You have to file down three toothbrushes.
There you go. But this is the same kind of thing. You have superheroes. You're matching up stuff. I'm liking it so far. It's a takeoff on the Dark Reign storyline. They set it up differently, but it looks like other than that, it's going to be the same thing where, you know, it Marvel over a couple years, Norman Osborn and all the bad guys were like had control of all the corporations and organizations and stuff. And all the Avengers were bad and all that. But it's very good. If you haven't played Puzzle Quest and you like superheroes, it's a good time to jump in. Eric, I definitely suggest you play Puzzle Quest 1 or 2.
I'll have to check it out.
I would say start with 1, and then do two if you like one.
Sweet.
That's it. I think that's enough. You got any, anything else you want to mention?
Oh, just a couple little things.
Okay.
The first thing is I'm pretty sure I still hate board games. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Rob. Actually, that first game that you played actually looked kind of fun.
The Resistance?
Yeah, the Resistance looked kind of fun. Yeah. I think the lying aspect is what appealed to me.
Yeah. It's a social game.
Yeah, I dig that, but I don't know. Like those last two games when you guys started arguing about the rules, I was not into that.
It happens.
Did you want to talk about any of your games?
Well, we played Resistance, which is kind of a, if anyone's played Werewolf or Mafia, it's kind of like that. You know, you have two teams, and one of the teams are spies, and they're hiding among in the good team, and you have to figure out who the spies are. I was a spy all three times we played, and I won all three times. Despite myself in the last time, I really tried to make it hard on the spy team in the last, on our, my own team in the last, and we still won just because of some weird fluke that's never happened before.
Yeah, someone sabotaged their own team. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. It's never happened. I've never seen it happen, but it's cool that it did. Then we play Guillotine, which is kind of a, I don't know what to call it. It's kind of a weird little card game where nobles are getting killed and you have to get the right amount of points. And we played...
it's very French.
It is French. No, we didn't. Then we played Takedo today and Galaxy Trekker today. All great games. All games I recommend. But yeah, I had a good time.
Sweet. Board games. I don't like them. I can tell you some things I do like.
What do you like?
One of my favorite hip-hop artists, or rather, it's like a hip-hop supergroup, has released an album the past couple of days. And if you've never heard the original album, it's called Deltron 3030. It's by Del the Funky Homo Sapien. He was the rapper from the Gorillaz' first Gorillaz album. If you remember that song, Clint Eastwood.
I do remember it.
You're familiar?
I am familiar.
So that's Del, but it's a super group with him. I want to say that Kid Koala and Dan the Automator also both worked on that Gorillaz album. I'm not certain about that, and I'm not going to Google it. But those are the guys. They're big names in terms of DJs and record producers, and they're very, very good. Like, I've followed some of their music on other albums, and it's also very good. But the first album, Deltron 3030, is one of my favorite albums, bar none. It's like weird, goofy, sci-fi hip-hop. And this is the follow-up album. It's been 10 or more years. Of course, I didn't discover it when it came out, the original, but I think I was in college when I heard it the first time, and it's remarkable, and this new one is really excellent. It's got, like, who all's on it? Like, Zach Del Rocha, I don't know, a bunch of people I don't really know. David Cross is on it. Which is funny, but it's great. I got the expanded edition, which includes instrumental versions of all the tracks, for like $12.
Hmm.
So I'm pretty happy about that. But it's a delightful album.
All right, then. There's a recommendation for you, folks.
I would recommend it to, if you like hip hop at all. I think that, well, if you know who Del the Funky Homo Sapien is, you should just buy it. Just straight out. Just get it. Because it's delightful.
Delightful.
It's delightful.
It's delightful.
It is delightful. Thank you. Thank you. I want to call you Vincent. You're not Vincent. You're Richmond.
So, folks, that was it for checking in.
Seems like enough.
I think so.
I think so, too.
And now it is time for the floppiest part of the week. It is time for weekly floppies.
Is it really that time? When did you get a trumpet?
Today.
Is it like a Miami yard sale?
On the way home, yeah, we just pulled off the interstate, and there's a guy just with his truck just selling trumpets.
Yeah, just a truck of trumpets?
They fell off the back of it.
They fell off the back of a trumpet truck?
Trumpet truck. Man, we are silly.
You know what? I approve.
Okay. First up, we're going to DC, folks. The first book, Batman Black and White number 2, the second in this anthology series, featuring Batman only in black and white and in gray, varying shades of gray, grayscale. Yes.
It's not just a clever name.
Not just a clever name. You get a beautiful cover of Jim Steranko on the front. It's weird.
I wish it was just a picture of Jim Steranko.
How about Jim Steranko dressed up as Batman?
That might even be better.
Yeah. But this one has five different little tiny stories in it. You want to just go in order through them real quick, Eric? Yeah, the first one is Man Bat Out of Hell, written by Dan DiDio, illustrated by J.G. Jones.
Can we just touch on what a wonderful pun that is?
What's his face? I can't think of his name right now.
You can't think of Meatloaf?
Meatloaf. It's a tough name.
Just think of what we eat all the time.
Yes.
And put loaf on it.
Yeah. Meatloaf would be very proud of it.
Would be very proud of it.
I like the art in it, but God, this story is just...
It's kind of hammy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hammy like a truck full of pigs.
It is. You see Batman interrupt a man bat, like, killing this guy, and then he realizes that the guy is a child molester, and man bat is just, you know, murdering him because that's okay, still.
Yeah, it's,
Batman's like, hey, it's alright, he's a child molester, man bat can murder him, it's fine.
Who's Dan Dildo?
Dan DiDio? Not yeah, Dan Dildo. He is the current, like, executive editor person in charge in DC.
I think that he shouldn't be... He shouldn't have been the president of this story. Because it's not very good.
No, it's not.
The art is gorgeous.
The art is great. J.G. Jones, it's a nice, lovely work, but...
Ink wash, I want to say. With some graphite.
Yeah, the story is awful. It's pretty overhanded. Heavy-handed over something.
I'll give Dan Dildo an overhand in the face.
Okay. That was good.
Your delayed laugh. That's Dildo. That was so funny.
The one after that is Into the Circle. Written and drawn by Raphael Grandpa.
Oh, this makes up for how bad the last one is.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
First of all, I love his art.
I don't even know how to explain it. Like it's I don't know. It's naturalistic and everything fits into a nice three-dimensional space. The figures are stylized in, you know, such an interesting cartoony way, but there's like an element of gritty realism.
Yeah,
you know, like I don't know. I really adore his work. Like it's you know, it's like he's combining all of the people that I love. You know, like I see like French artists that I love in here. You know, it's like looking at Mobius combined with Aderzo from the Asterix comics, with a shitload of Popeye thrown in for no good reason, or for just, you know, for why not?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
He's amazing.
It's so good. I've been like, this is the one thing I was really looking forward to because ever since I found his stuff and I got his So
yeah, you introduced me to this brilliant man.
His Mesmo Delivery book, which is also really good. It's unfortunately too it's really short, but
I need to buy myself a copy.
It's great. And
the fact that this story is the only work I own by this man, I don't know. I cannot forget how delightful he is.
Yeah, and I mean, the story is excellent as well. There's a nice little twist in it that actually caught me by surprise. You know, it was a little, I'm going, oh, okay, that's interesting.
I don't know if I'd call it excellent, but
no, I like
you
it.
You know, for a 4 or 5 page story.
Well, I mean that's what you're judging it by. You can't compare it to like a epic arc, but
yeah.
We'll go to the next one. It's A Place in Between, written and illustrated by Raphael Albuquerque. Eric, what did you think about this?
So
fun.
A lot of Raphaels.
Yeah, exactly.
In this book. I like the art. I thought nothing of the story. I don't know. The art is it's loose and suggestive in the way like good comic book art should be, but it's also very high energy.
Yes.
And nicely detailed, you know, in limited areas, which is, I think, a lot more. It's more skillful to do that than to just overdraw the hell out of something. It's a completely forgettable story. This is sort of like...
It's been done.
Well, it's sort of like a test story that someone does to say, hey, DC, can I have a job?
Yeah, sequential storytelling and...
Yeah, I mean, it's... Nothing about it is badly done, but the nothing about it is, you know...
The story has been done before. This story has...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's another... I mean, I can think of multiple... Yeah. Batman stories in multiple media formats that use this same setup.
Exactly.
Which is just Scarecrow, you know, messing with Batman's mind.
Yeah.
I mean, this, again, you say the art is very good, but, you know, the art is
gorgeous. It the Raphaels are doing some good work on some art in this book.
Next up, we have Winter's End. Written by Jeff Lemire, illustrated by Alex Nino, or Nino, either way.
El Nino.
El Nino.
Spanish for the Nino.
The Nino. But this has a little, I don't even know how to, it's a little winter, like a wintry, what's the setting? That was the thing that confused me a little bit. Where is he?
It's a bit of a confusing story.
Yeah. I mean, I it's cold, obviously.
It's a Mr. Freeze story. Yeah? I thought I'd read that.
I don't...
Am I illiterate?
I don't know if there's actually...
Yeah, there it is on one of the last pages, Mr. Freeze's tech. But the design had Edward Nygma's thumbprints on it.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
But what's the city at the end? Where is that? Where are they?
I don't know. It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Is it supposed to be Gotham, or?
I think that's the gimmick. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a winter wonderland.
I guess so. How do you feel about the art?
I think it's very beautiful. It is not telling the story very well because we're confused as hell.
Yeah.
This is a Jeff Lemire story.
Yes, it is.
You said that.
I did.
I think that's like strike three for me with Jeffrey. I'm not a fan.
You like Animal Man?
I do like Animal Man. I'm not taking a strike away though.
I mean, you don't have to like cut someone off just because you don't like things.
Nope. Nope. Nope.
That's it.
That's fine. This is really not my thing though. I don't care for it. It does.
I liked it, but I didn't know what was going on half the time. It helps that it's like, I think this is a story that should have been a full comic book, or multiple comic books, and then it could be set up differently. I don't know. It just seems like it's very compressed. Like, look, there's a whole bunch of stuff happening, and a whole bunch of story, and then it's just boom, boom, boom. Here's things. This happens, and it's done.
Yeah. That's kind of the feeling you get from this, and I think that the art kind of lends to that, in that it's not telling the story in the most effective way.
No.
It's really fun, loose artwork, but it's not really establishing what's happening very clearly.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that you and I sort of say a lot is, you know, oh, this art's telling the story very well. This is an example of art not telling the story terribly well.
No, it does not lead you from A to B to C to D.
Yeah.
It's just going, oh, what's on this page? What's happening? Why is this?
It's an example of, I mean, it's not like he's a bad artist.
No.
He is a good artist. This is good art. But in storytelling, it is not telling a story. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the last little story in this, in two, is Silent Night, Unholy Night, which is told in the style of kind of an old teleplay. Inspired, they even say so, inspired by the old Max Fleischer shorts. It says, photoplay written by Michael Uslan, directed by Dave Bullock, edited by Mark Chiarello. I don't know what, they give people names, I don't know what they...
I don't know, it's very confusing, to be honest.
But I liked it.
They can't just say...
Yeah, you know, art. This yes. person did this kind of art. This person did this.
They gotta get all damned cute with it.
Yeah, but
sons of bitches.
I did enjoy whatever you want to call it, the story, and the art, and the way they presented it.
I thought it was fun. I think the art is very handsome. It's one of the most like intense emo goth Bruce Waynes I've ever seen.
Yes, it is. But I mean, it's set in that kind of. It's supposed to be like, what? When was Fleischer? It's 40s, 50s. Mm-hmm. So that Batman was very different than the Batman we know.
I think one of the things that I really like about it is that, like, a lot of these, they look like black and white artwork. This looks like something that should be in color, but has been like. Do you know what I mean? It looks like it's been photographed in black and white or something. Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah.
It's like watching...
it's like when you get a color picture and print it in grayscale.
Yeah, but I think that's what they're going for, and I think it's been pulled off beautifully.
Yeah, it works very well.
Like, it's not like the Man-Bat story or something in the beginning that's done in ink wash. This looks... It's very, I can't remember who it was that talked about black and white. It might have been, you know, a famous artist like Picasso. But they talk about, like, good black and white artwork should suggest color.
Right.
And I feel like this does. I mean, it's black and white, but I look at it and I can see very vividly, you know? Like, I can, I don't know. This is... I think it's very successful for the goofy gimmick that it's going for.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it works very well, and I think it hits what they were, you know, their goal.
Yeah,
of creating this kind of throwback mm-hmm. storytelling. So that was Batman Black and White number 2, Variety of Artists. The highlight for me is the grandpa story, obviously. It's a buy for me.
It's good. It's delightful.
So it's a double buy. Next up.
Double buy.
Forever Evil, number 2.
Tee hee hee.
Yeah. Written by Jeff Johns. Pencils by Dave Finch. Colored by Sonia Obek. Inks, Richard Friend. And this, it seemed like it was starting out in an interesting way.
Yeah, it actually starts off not that bad a comic book, but
then
it just like slopes off to being the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah, it's like right up until you get to the point where all the big baddies are like hanging out together, and then it's just like, oh, what's happening? Why? Oh, this is terrible. And we get Bizarro Project B Zero. Subject B0, and he's biz.
Wow, that really?
That's, yeah. He's subject
B0.
B0, he's Bizarro.
I just threw up on my iPad.
I know. And we see the crime syndicate. They kill the Teen Titans, and finally we get a glimpse of Batman and Catwoman at the very end. It's not the story. It's just so hackneyed. Mm. It's so... This is the most interesting thing. Supervillains, the most powerful supervillains take over the world, and this is what we get. Yeah. This is the most interesting thing they could show. Just another fight scene, and then Lex Luthor, slowly... there's just not a lot of happens in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lex Luthor posing with B-Zero.
Yeah, B-Zero.
I did think that it was... I'm a little interested to see what the hell evil Green Lantern, what's going on with him.
Yeah, that was the most interesting thing, I think. And among all the crime syndicate guys, the rest I could give a shit about.
His power ring seems to be infecting him or something.
Yeah, I think he's like, can I take it off? And he's like, no, you're not ready. So in a week he'll probably be absorbed completely and be whatever. But again, we get, let me see, 1, 2, 3 pages of Bizarro killing a guard. It takes 3 pages for him to come out.
3 pages.
Yeah, 3 pages. When he pops up out of the tube. Pops out.
I guess.
And it takes 3 pages for him just to kill, for Luthor and him. That could have been done in a page. Why does that take 3 pages?
Well, you gotta put your filler in somewhere.
Yes. And we get in the posing. Do you like his art, Eric? I don't remember if we've talked about his before. I mean, it's very Jim Lee-y.
Yeah,
we've mentioned that.
I'm pretty sure that was my comment last time, that it's very Jim Lee, but didn't we say that it wasn't typically Jim Lee as Jim Lee-y as this?
I don't know. David Finch generally doesn't draw as he doesn't look again. I like him. They're pushing towards it, I guess, Jim Lee aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's not bad. It's
not terrible. There's some things about it I don't care for. The way this evil Flash, it looks like a 90s comic every panel that he's in.
Yes, it does.
It's like reading a damn Spawn book or something.
I almost picked a Spawn book for us to read.
You should do it. It'd be hilarious.
And a newer one. Because I don't even know what that universe is like now.
I think the people are demanding it.
Yes, I hear them yelling.
When are they going to reboot the Spawn universe, Robbie?
As soon as Todd McFarlane gets tired of it and he sells him the rights. But he probably sells too many toys to do that. This Forever Evil, I was truly like, DC's back off Villains Month. I'm like, I'll give it a shot. This is bad. Do not buy this, please. Forever Evil number 2, do not buy.
Do not buy from me as well.
Yeah,
I see eye to eye with that. It was
not very good.
Yeah.
And their big event. The big event that's leading out of the last big event.
So Trinity War actually finished?
Yeah, it finished and led into this.
That was a really quick event.
Yes, and this
it really did seem like it was less than a month when we were like, "Hey, Trinity War is terrible," and then we're like, "Villains Month is terrible."
Forever Evil, terrible.
Totes.
Next up is our Indie Book of the Week. It's from Dark Horse, so get your Dark Horse app open. It's The Occultist.
I shan't be opening mine.
Shan't be opening Volume 2. It's created by Mike Richardson. The story by Mike Richardson and Tim Seeley. Tim Seeley of Hack and Slash, Infamy. Art is by Mike Norton. Mike Norton of Battle Pug, Infamy. Colors by Alan Passalacqua. Letters by Nate Picos of Blambot.
So it's his font.
Yes, it's his font.
Well, I could have actually hand lettered it. I don't know, but I follow Nate on Twitter.
Okay. That's interesting. And this is, I saw this, I think the original one had gotten some hype, and so I saw this was coming out. I was like, we'll check it out and see what happens. It's basically a teenager who's also like a Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Kind of. Who has a crush on...
He is not a teenager, though. He is a college student. He's a
college student, okay. College student Doctor Strange.
Yes.
It's funny that you don't even have this in front of you.
I remember things. I did a good job reading.
You did. You had
reading is fundamental.
Your comprehension skills are very high.
They're actually not.
But he has a crush on the detective that is like apparently goes out with him on these supernatural calls, and they're in this evil haunted orphanage, and there's like these white babies.
I do love the phrase "evil haunted orphanage."
Evil haunted orphanage. It's not a benevolent haunted orphanage.
Haunted orphanage. That's like that's a death metal band if ever I've heard it.
Well, now we know what our band name's going to be, Eric.
Fucking A.
Haunted orphanage. We'll do like a we can do like a 3 inches of blood type thing where one of us can be like the screamy yelly guy, and the other person can do like the Rob Halford vocals.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
And then I'll just sing Ring of Fire for shits and giggles.
We'll have a cover of that, obviously.
Naturally.
Naturally. I thought this was... And then you get to see him... I don't know what's going on with this mentor guy who's apparently is nefarious, possessed by a nefarious creature of some sort.
Right.
But I kind of like this book. It's kind of like I don't know. Quirky.
Yeah.
It's quirky.
I didn't hate it, but it really hasn't left a very lasting impression on me. I mean, I remember the pitch. You know, I remember college student Doctor Strange. You know?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you the character's name. I couldn't even tell you what he looks like at this point.
I remember his name because it's my name.
You see, I know you, and I didn't even remember.
Rob Bailey. They call him Robbie at one point in this.
Well, so it
made it very easy for me to remember that.
I would think that if you forgot that would be weird.
Yeah.
That would be strange.
I'm partial to books that have main characters that are named after me. It doesn't happen very often. There's only a few Robbies in fiction in general.
I haven't seen too many comics with characters named Zebulon.
Not yet.
Not enough.
But I like it. I like the art. It suits it. It bounces around between kind of creepy supernatural stuff and kind of everyday. It reminds me a lot of Spider-Man, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. And I think it's a fun idea. And this is like the second arc of it. That's what confused me, because it's number one. But there's a whole arc before this. I thought this was just a really terrible sort of in medias res storytelling. You know, because there's a bunch of shit that it's throwing at you that it doesn't introduce. It's like, who are these people?
Yeah.
What's going on? What's the setting? It doesn't make sense.
No.
But it's the second
volume, yeah.
Yeah, second arc. Although the app doesn't really list it as volume 2 or
no,
it's
just, it doesn't.
It's a little confusing. It's just it's number 1.
Dark Horse has a habit of doing that. They do it with Hellboy,
right,
where it's just Hellboy colon the arc. Whatever it is, or BRPD, the arc.
Yes.
And then they just go through that, and then when it's over, they go start over with new numbers and everything like that.
I don't understand that. You know, it's...
Well, it's to try and get people to not be, scared of picking up a book that's issue number 35 or something like that. If they see a number 1, they'll go, oh, well, I can pick this up and know where it's going. And not be frightened. And that's true of there's no one saying that comic books number 35, you can't pick it up and, get up to speed very quickly. But has that image of that.
Yeah.
So that's them trying to combat that, going, it may have some stuff you're not familiar with. But if you pick this up, you'll get the gist of it, and you can continue on from here, and you'll learn what you need. You'll know what you need to know. It's marketing. And I don't think it's a bad idea, necessarily. It's not very clear in the app at all, which I think is a problem.
It is. That's more my issue, is just labeling, because it confused both of us, I think.
Yeah, I I didn't understand.
You
I, got,
still,
I didn't know.
You still bought the right one, but I was.
I didn't know they were doing this with this book. But
right. Right.
It doesn't bother me now that I know that.
Yeah, but we had to argue about it and figure it out.
Yeah, but I'm a buy in The Occultist. I like it. I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a second issue, probably personally. I don't think I'm going to bring it back for the podcast, but I'm going to read it again, give it another shot because I like it. I'm a buy.
I think that it's an interesting premise. I think it's got promise. I would not buy this book. I'm not going. I read it on Robbie's iPad. I will not buy a copy. I may check in with this later because I think it's an interesting title to watch, but I would not buy. I don't recommend it.
Okay, so there we go. Some contention.
Yes.
Next up, we go over to Marvel, where I got three books in Marvel this week. I just couldn't resist. First up is Savage Wolverine number 9, writing and art by Jock, with colors by Lee Luffridge and letters by Corey Pettit. Eric, I picked this book just because I want to know what you would think about it.
It is the weirdest Wolverine story.
It is.
That I've ever read. And there have been some weird Wolverine stories.
There have been.
I wonder about this Jock guy. It's spelled like jockstrap and not like French guy Jock.
Yeah.
But I'm still wondering. I don't know. I'm wondering. It feels like one of those Mobius wandering around in the desert stories.
He has said, he's stated that he was kind of going for it, that kind of feel.
Yeah. It's I don't know that I'm blown away by it, but I'm hooked. You know? I'm interested about what's going on. Because it's crazy.
Yeah, it's Wolverine. It starts with Wolverine getting thrown off of a spaceship.
Yeah.
Plummeting into this alien planet with, like, this vague mission. And it's him, like, out in this desert on this planet, killing this gigantic bug monster.
It's a huge tardigrade.
Yeah, it's
gigantic. That actually is what it looks like. A huge tardigrade.
I don't know what that is.
A tardigrade is, it is a tiny little bugbear thing. That's another name for them, bugbears.
Oh, bugbears. Okay, I've heard that before, yeah.
I think not to be confused with, I think, the D&D monster.
Okay, that's what I was thinking of.
That is what you're thinking of. But they live in, like, you know, on trees and puddles of water and things, but they are one of the most hardiest creatures on Earth.
Second only to naked mole rats.
No, they'd kick a naked mole rat's ass.
Oh.
But they can live in, like, sub-zero temperatures, in extreme heat. They can even survive in the vacuum of space, which has led some people to feel that they are actually alien life. I mean, and it's legitimate. They can survive in the vacuum of space in sub-zero temperatures for an unknown amount of time. They go into a hibernation stasis and can be revived. They're kind of amazing. But they look like that thing. You should look up tardigrades.
Okay. But he's doing
that. Was very informative, wasn't it?
It was. It's like
a 40-minute lecture on friggin' tardigrades.
That's our education for the week. He encounters this little kid, and that is where it really got me. I really like this. Because it's all Wolverine always, they always put him with a young female character. You know, that's, like, that has been his, like, he had, the cat's playing piano behind me. He had Kitty Pryde, he had Jubilee, and then X-23. Historically, he's always had a young female character. It's really interesting for him to have a young male character, like, be his sidekick.
His little brother.
Yeah. And like Eric said, this is a weird Wolverine story. You know, there's nothing like this. And that enough is, like, enough to get me, like, what's happening? I want to know. Obviously, they do have spaceships in the current Marvel Universe, but this does not seem like it's a present-day story. That's kind of one of the interesting things about Wolverine is that you could tell a story with him in any time period. It doesn't, because he's, like, ageless.
Mm-hmm.
Or mostly ageless. But that's Savage Wolverine number 9. I'm a buy.
Yeah, I'd recommend this. I would say buy.
Okay, awesome. Awesome getting back on track here.
Do you hate it when we disagree, when we fight?
A little bit.
Do you like it when I talk about tardigrades?
Not really, no.
I was gonna say you're gonna cut my rant about tardigrades.
No, we have to include it. It's important people know.
It's important people know that aliens live amongst us.
Exactly. That's important. That's some MIB shit right there.
That is.
Okay, Eric, rap.
No.
What about the Men in Black?
No.
Okay, fine. Next up is Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 4, written by Nick Spencer, art by Steve Lieber, colors by Rachel Rosenberg, letters by Joe Carig-Magna. This, we saw Boomerang kicked out of the group in the last issue, and now he comes back to save the day, save the group again, do more. He's wheeling and dealing. I'm really enjoying this book. This is them doing another Hawkeye style book, and I really like it. You like this, Eric? Did you think?
I enjoyed it. We've not been following it though.
I've been reading it.
Yeah, I know, but I'm coming into it having missed. I missed number 3. I just missed 1.
Yeah,
I haven't missed a world of it. So the interim issue I've missed, and the plot's not been pushed together too much or pushed. Pushed along too much.
No, the recap page does an adequate job of catching people up.
I love that the chameleon.
Yeah.
Comedian is not in this story.
The comedian's not in this story.
It'd be weird if he was.
It would be weird.
Yeah.
You love the chameleon?
I love that he's in jail. I don't know. It's interesting seeing the weird human aspect of all of these ridiculous Spider-Man villains.
Yes,
because they're ridiculous.
Yes, they are ridiculous.
It's the same weird Venture Brothers storytelling that was in the last book that we read together.
Yeah,
it's they're a little bit less pathetic. It's like the arc is starting to gel, so you can take them a little bit more seriously now. It's still very much got that sort of flavor to it.
Yes, it does. And it's light, it's funny. Again, they saw how well Hawkeye did, and obviously. And this, I take another couple books that are like this kind of style, and you know, set, yeah. You know, like a lighter, more indie style superhero look at superheroes.
I think that it's different enough from Hawkeye.
Yeah, it is.
It's not really saying the same thing.
No, it's not.
I mean, it's the human story.
Yes.
It's definitely different enough. It's got its own thesis. And the fact that it's about these bad guys is pretty refreshing. Like, I really like the part when they had just gotten beaten up by Luke Cage and Power... with Iron Fist, not Power Man. What am I thinking?
Well, Power Man and Iron Fist. Basically.
Is he? Oh wait, he's Power Man.
He was Power Man. Now he's just Luke Cage.
Okay. Well, so yes, they beat them up, and they're like, "Oh man, that was awesome! We got beat up by Luke Cage." Yeah.
Can I get an autograph?
Yeah. They're like, "What's wrong with you?" And he's like, "He's just doing his job." I don't know. I thought that was pretty amazing, and the reveal at the end.
Was really good, yeah.
Oh God, yeah.
It was funny.
I was shocked.
Yeah, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah, I have to say they're doing this book right. I didn't care for number 2 as much, but it had a nice feel to it. This one is very well done, very very well done.
Yeah, this is. Again, I've been reading this even when we're not doing the podcast. It's on my pull list every week. Every time it comes out, it's really good. So I'm a buy. That's Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 4. I'm a buy.
I'm a buy as well.
S12. Right. Last book of the week. I added this one last second because I was really intrigued by it after I read it. I saw some stuff online about it. I was like, I need to check this out. Marvel Knights, they're restarting the Marvel Knights line, brand, whatever you want to call it. And they're doing it, first off, with the new Spider-Man book, Peter Parker Spider-Man. None of this Dr. Otto Octavius bullshit. We saw him driving, me and Eric saw him drive Dr. Otto driving around the other, yesterday, I think.
We didn't get a chance to harass him.
He'd probably just think we're crazy people.
Well, he would definitely think that.
He'd definitely think we're crazy people. But this is written by Matt. This is Spider-Man Marvel Knights number one, written by Matt Kent, which I was kind of interested with. Marco Rudy is the artist. Val Staples did the colors, letters, and production by Clayton Cowles. This is a very weird book.
Yes, it is. It is easily the weirdest book we've done this week.
Easily. Every page, it's, you know, the layout and art is, I don't know, hallucinatory, you know, psychotropic, crazy, bendy layouts. Really intense. You see, like, Peter Parker going, and there's one page where he looks like frickin' Matt Smith.
No, absolutely, and I'm right. It is exactly... looks exactly like Matt Smith. He even looks kind of like Matt Smith in the other panels. But the one that you're talking about, it's just a big picture of Matt Smith's face.
I know, I'm like, is this a Doctor Who comic too? Are we doing that?
Yes, Matt Smith, Spider-Man. It's not Peter Parker anymore.
It's Peter Parker. Matt Smith. It's Peter Parker as Matt Smith as Peter Parker.
Yes, Matt Smith.
If they cast Matt Smith as Peter Parker.
I think that he has a really terrible American accent.
I've never heard it.
I just imagine it being bad.
Yeah. But this is basically Arcade complete with some mutton chops. Arcade with some wicked mutton chops. Throwing Spider-Man this crazy... giving him drugs. And now he's like in this... video game where he has to kill 99, well, not kill, but take on 99 villains. I read this. It's crazy, but yeah. I really liked it though. It's interesting. Something I haven't seen out of anything recently like this. Is it too crazy for you, Eric? I'm sensing that.
The art is amazing, and I like how weird and experimental it is. I think it's worth buying maybe on that level alone. It's certainly not worth buying for any kind of story. How do you feel about that?
I think that, I mean, the Marvel Knights line was always kind of about doing things that aren't...
Yeah, about being weird and experimental.
Being different, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the story is, I think, suits the artwork. It's not easy to follow. And you're kind of confused, but I don't know if that's necessarily bad in this case. Because by the end, I understand what's happening. I'm not following it clearly as I go through it, but neither can Peter Parker. I think you're supposed to be like, what's happening? Like, you're seeing bits and pieces of little stories of weird things, of weird visions, of psychosis. But by the last three pages, I go, oh... okay, that all makes sense now. So I'm not... I like it. The storytelling, I expect it not to be... the following issues not to be as confusing. If they are, I would probably lower my opinion of it. I like Matt Kent as a writer. He generally is pretty tight. So that leads... just on my, you know, trust in him from reading other things he's written... He writes Mind Management, which is very trippy, but it is the kind of same feel where you're like, what's happening? And then you go, oh, okay, I understand now. And that's kind of the same thing. So I'm going to give him, I have faith that that is what he's intending in this, that it's supposed to be confusing because you're supposed to experience it the same way that Peter Parker is experiencing, Matt Smith, Peter Parker is experiencing it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think it's bad. I can understand why, if you read this, you're like, what the fuck is happening? I can't... it's just weird flashes of... it's beautiful artwork.
Yeah, but then it's really amazing artwork.
Yeah, and again, I would say it's worth buying just for that.
Yeah.
Because it's really, really nice. But again, it's very, like Eric said, very experimental, very weird, and you're not going to be able to track what's happening for at least half, if not more, of the book.
I think it hurts the storytelling. It's just so weird and experimental that I have to... It's kind of like having a Spider-Man story told to me through interpretive dance.
It kind of... Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah. It's a nice spectacle. I won't say... I think I've said my piece on that.
Art is gorgeous. Story is crazy. I'm a buy. I am going to buckle my seatbelt and see where it goes. Again, mm-hmm. I would say buy it, try it. If you don't like it, then drop it.
Yeah. I think that I'm reluctant to say exactly that, but I'm going to say exactly that. I'm going to agree with that exactly.
Yeah, I think that we need for Marvel to go out and publish a book like this is good, and so I'm going to endorse them doing that, and not just another Spider-Man story, which they could have easily done. And from you look at the little next, let the games begin, that little art on the last page, like the promo page, it doesn't look it's like a little weird, almost web cartoon style of Spider-Man sitting on an airplane with all his villains around him. So I'm gonna give it a shot. So I'm gonna buy. Eric, we're both try it, give it a shot. I'm more positive. Eric's a little bit more negative on it.
That's but accurate.
We're kind of joining in the middle where, try it out.
Mm-hmm. I'm cautious. I kind of want to see where it's going.
So we're both buys on that.
I do think that it's a bad idea to make your story arc around a Jay-Z song. I don't know if that's wise.
99 problems, but what, Uncle Ben ain't one? I don't know how to
take that, Uncle Ben.
Take that, Uncle Ben. Beef.
Beef is delicious.
Beef is delicious. You had some recently.
I did.
So we're done with that. That's the end of the floppies part of the week.
Mm-hmm.
No more weekly floppies. Until next time. We're going to move right into Nerd Boy Book Club. No time. What are we doing this week, Eric?
No time for no mess around.
No time for no mess around. This is your book. I want you to introduce it.
You want me to introduce it?
Yeah.
Well, last week you talked about how much you hate The Rocketeer, and I figured let's go to the source.
I never said I hate it.
Well, you can hate the source.
I don't. Okay.
Which is Dave Stevens, The Rocketeer, and I have learned some things reading this. I think it's a good thing that I ended up buying the digital edition, in addition to the old analog edition, which I have, which I was just calling the one I had, The Rocketeer, when the one that is selling on Comixology is actually twice as long. It's got basically two arcs in one. Were you aware of that?
No. I from what you were talking earlier, you said that there's stuff in there that you hadn't.
Yeah, and
seen before.
This is two adventures. The first one. Is just The Rocketeer, and the second one is Cliff's New York Adventure.
Right. I was curious, where, how they split it up and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. There were apparently a couple of years in between, but it's all Dave Stevens' work. And the edition that you and I read off of Comixology.
Yes.
It's available for super cheap, and I think... If I don't know, Dave Stevens is a fantastic artist, and I think it's worth picking up just to see his art. But the artist that colored these, I forget her name, but she's listed.
Laura Martin.
Yeah, she was actually handpicked by Dave Stevens to recolor this digital edition before he died.
She has a good reputation.
So you know of her?
I've, yes, I've, I've. She, you read I've read stuff that she's, you know, worked on before, and she's well regarded within, you know, comic book circles.
Can you rifle off anything that she's done?
Not off the top of my head.
Not off the top of your head. No. Fair enough.
I can do some research before I post and.
Oh, it's fine either way, but it's interesting because it seems to be something that we keep touching back on, is the digital recoloring versus the old analog print color.
Yeah.
I've got both of them. I can look at the same page in two editions. It's certainly on a printing level, on a cleanness level. It's better.
Yeah.
But there's like a richness to it that's missing.
Character?
Yeah, it's a little Muppety.
It is. I was going to ask you what you felt about, how you felt about the new coloring. And generally that's how I feel about. It's not that it's bad.
Yeah.
It's lacking that feeling of age.
Yeah.
It sometimes helps the book in a strange way. It makes it feel, you know, more unique and kind of gives it a personality.
The garishness, it does something for it, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that, like, I'm looking at the page where Betty is, the two guys have come in on her while she's posing nude for photographs.
Yeah, that's a pretty iconic kind of thing.
Yeah, but, like, her skin looks sunburned in the print edition, and it looks like a skin tone in the other one.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's more details in the ink work isn't carrying all the detail. It's a lot flatter color in the original. She's actually edited out and softened up some of the line work and replaced it with actual paint marks. You know, it's interesting the decisions that she's made, but it is very true to the original, but the cleanness of it is I don't know, it's different.
Yeah.
Better and somehow worse.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's hard, like you said, it is
hard to articulate.
It's not that it's bad, it's different.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And sometimes it's, you know, it's not bad, you don't mind it, and then sometimes you're like, we touched on it in the Weapon X discussion we had as well. Mm-hmm. Barry Windsor Smith's the same kind of thing where they recolored.
Yeah.
And I don't know, this is more like the Dave Stevens art is more, I think, more, I don't know how much, I don't think they've done it. There's an artist edition of this from IDW.
I want it.
Yeah, it's
so
it,
bad.
Very expensive.
We've
talked about this without really talking about it yet.
Yeah, we kind of jumped ahead a couple of steps.
Yeah, but The Rocketeer, it's the story is we touched on the story of the movie. Mm-hmm. And the comic book is similar. There, you know.
Yeah, it's got all the elements. They're just sort of in a little bit different place.
Yeah, but it's, you know, this down and out pilot finds this experimental jetpack, and hijinks ensue. Mm-hmm. And there's cops, and there's Nazis, and
feds,
and there's Howard Hughes, and, you know,
yeah,
Betty Page lookalikes.
Yes,
Dave Stevens certainly control a fine female form.
He can. It's actually really interesting because when he drew this, no one really cared who Betty Page was. So he inserted her into this book. This book was just sort of his excuse to draw a bunch of things that he liked. Like, I'm not exactly sure. I think it's the two... I'm not sure who the characters are, but supposedly there are Doc Savage characters that he put in here.
Yeah, I read that too.
So there's two Doc Savage characters in the first story, and he blatantly puts the Shadow in the New York adventure. Like, he calls him something else, but he looks just like the Shadow. He shoots with two guns. He's got the huge nose.
Yeah.
His name is not Lamont or whatever it is, but yeah. But I think it might be these two guys that are supposed to be the Doc Savage characters.
But yeah,
this is his sort of pulp story, and he also inserted Betty Page, like almost exactly Betty Page. It looks just like her.
Yeah.
And I think what's kind of... I don't know. It's I don't know how to describe it. It's a little fan fiction-y.
Yes.
And that he... if you look up a picture of how Dave Stevens looked and you compare it to the painting of Cliff Secord on the cover of The Rocketeer...
Yeah.
It looks exactly the same. So he made a book about himself getting a rocket pack, dating the hottest girl that he was in love with when he was a kid, and meeting the shadow.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's wonderful he's given us The Rocketeer. But at the same time, when you look at it that way, it's like, hmm.
I try not to judge.
You know, it worked out for him pretty well.
Yeah,
he actually met Betty Page because of this book.
Right, yeah.
He thought she was dead.
Really?
Yeah, he thought she was dead. No one had heard from her.
She wasn't
a popular figure.
Have you seen the biopic about her?
About her, no.
Notorious Betty Page?
No.
It's pretty good.
I imagine it is good. She was probably a very interesting person. But I think I read that because I have Brush with Passion, which is the big posthumous Dave Stevens art book.
Yeah.
It was much hyped, and they had been talking about it for about a year. It took him about a year, year and a half, I think, after he died to release it. Might even been longer than that. I'm not 100%. It told a lot of his story and, you know, the whole story with him and Betty, and talked about this book, and it's excellent.
Yeah.
I love The Rocketeer.
I was going to say, like you said, there's two stories in this.
Yeah.
The weird carnival mystery. Yeah,
it's really odd, isn't it?
I wasn't expecting it, and I really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun.
It was not the complete opposite of what I was expecting, with this weird throwback to, you know, carnies and freaks and all that. Really interesting. I liked that, and I guess I like that kind of feel more than I like the whole airfield drama stuff. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Which is more what the Rocketeer is known for. It's known for, you know, old airplanes and jetpacks and blimps and, you know, feds. And I didn't like that. I do just want to say the thing that I really didn't like, probably the thing that I liked the least, is the dialogue, kind of the weird...
The dialect.
The dialects, yeah.
Yeah, we talk about that seems to be another theme for us.
Yeah.
Is dialect done badly.
Yeah. You think, what's a why? You think, ow, geez, what's the big idea, Millie? Ow, what's a... Y'all stopping at the... They're like the bone syndrome with no E's on the...
Yeah. I know where you're coming from there.
It doesn't, I know it's supposed to be like a play on all the kind of pulp comic-y, you know, tropes,
mm-hmm.
but it just seems corny to me.
I'm curious, I couldn't find when the second volume came out, when the New York Adventure was released.
Yeah, it was difficult finding like hard dates on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, like I'm curious when it was published. And I wonder if Dave got to finish it even. It probably came out before he died, but I don't know that for a fact. Because I see on here, on the credits page, Volume 2 Art Assists, and then it lists like four of the most amazing artists I can think of off the top of my head. Art Adams, Jeff Darrow, Gary Gianni, and Michael Kaluta. Those are four of the coolest people on Earth. Those are four of the best artists I can think of, bar none.
Yeah.
I'm really curious why they're listed there, because it makes me feel like it wasn't finished, and you know, they had some kind of connection to Dave, so they were asked to come in and finish it, because it does, it maybe it's just because I've seen all of the first part and the whole second part was a surprise to me, to this digital edition.
Yeah.
That it feels different, but I don't know, something about the art seems a little strange. It seems a little less Dave Stevens-y in some parts.
Yeah, I've from what I read, he was a huge perfectionist and would spend incredible lengths of time redoing things because he thought he could do better.
Yeah.
And I don't, again, that is a good question, like how much was finished and how much is, I mean, with all those art assists, quote unquote, is that right. A little bit from each of those guys that they each take a page and, you know, finish, just clean it up or do their best Dave Stevens impersonation.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. Especially considering that you would be the one to recognize it, and it's all new to you. You don't have the old edition of the second story.
Yeah, and it's entirely possible there's one out there. It was it came out in a magazine format, I think.
Yeah,
but I didn't see when.
Yeah, but again, the storytelling, it's a clear homage to pulp comics, pulp stories of The Shadow, of Doc Savage. The art is great, gorgeous. Eric, do you want to talk about, you know, your first experience with the art of this and, you know, your thoughts on it?
I was introduced to the Rocketeer from the movie.
Right.
And I discovered Dave Stevens, I think even independent of the Rocketeer, I can't even remember the first artwork that I saw by him. It was probably his Women.
Yeah.
That is probably what drew me in. I don't know. His art style is very difficult to describe. There's just like an iconic sort of perfectness to the way he draws things. You know, the figures, they have a lot of like energy to the line work. They have an animated feel to them and sort of a cartooniness as well, but they're, you know, it's cartoony realism, but it's not anime, you know?
Yeah.
It's something that, it predates the anime craze.
Yes.
But it's got sort of that level of appeal with like the big eyes and
exaggerated features.
Know. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not, it really walks that line of being cartoony, and I think the sort of, I didn't catch the guy's name, even as many times as I've read it, his name never sticks out to me, but the frog guy, what does he introduce himself as? The thug guy.
Oh, yes, that's, I was looking at that page where the page after they break in.
Yeah.
And his, when he's leaning into.
Yes, that's exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that, it reminds me of Warner Brothers, of Looney Tunes.
Yeah, I mean it's got the squash and stretch principles of cartooning, but it's still he that character more than anyone in this book really walks the line of being a plausible person and less of a cartoon.
But yeah, it's,
I don't know, he's a remarkable guy. Like he's got that ability to draw something and just like crush it. You know, and like not overdraw it, like it's done simply and really beautifully.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, it's clean.
Yes,
and beautiful. It's like it can be, it's somehow ornate and simple at the same time.
Yes,
and again, the complaint I have, my probably the two things I'd have my complaints, the dialects.
Yeah.
Which, it's weird because as the story goes on, it kind of fades. Like, it starts off with heavier, kind of that, the dialects focus, But it's not as heavy as you go on through the story, so it doesn't bother you nearly as much. But then the love interest, I know it's very like playing on the tropes of the time period of that type of story, but the female character is like a prop.
Yeah,
she like doesn't exist. I mean, she's a completely static character. I mean, and a lot of the characters in this are very staticky. Yeah, I mean, it's playing off those tropes of the pulp comics. So again, I can't blame it because a lot of that is, and it's, I mean, most of us were super focused on the main character, and everything else is just like window dressing.
Window dressing.
But it's so gorgeous. It's, I mean, and this is $6.
Yeah.
You can get the digital edition for $6. It's beautiful. Very, very beautiful. The bulldog has kind of the same face as the
as the guy.
As the guy.
Yeah, as the frog man. That's about right.
It's pretty the funny. Bulldog.
I think that the coloring is a lot nicer and richer on in the second story, don't you think? It really works a lot better.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like maybe she cut loose into it a little bit more.
She might have. He was well regarded among pretty much everyone. I'm sure she was, you know, there's a somewhat level of intimidation on trying not, she did not wanting to take away anything.
Yes.
And maybe as you get more familiar with it, you can, you know, put more nuance into it.
Mm-hmm. It also kind of feels like the setting has more drama to it. You know, there's more light and shadow, more contrast.
Yeah, it's not all, here's an airfield and it's sunny outside.
It's all daytime, everything's lit flatly. You know, it seemed like she was kind of timid about punching it up at all.
And now, the second one's like it's dark and then it's light and you're inside like a lit theater, so there's different levels of lighting and
yeah, and then there's fire.
And there's fire, yeah. But I like it a lot. It's good.
I'm glad I could force you to read it.
No, I mean, I'm not going to say the story is like the best story ever.
Do you want to talk more about that? I mean, he's not really known for
being a great writer. No,
it's just more as a creation.
It's a delivery system for his unbelievable art.
Yeah, well, not just that, but it's, you know, it's okay to come up with fun ideas and characters and tell a simple story. Like there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. Know? And yeah, this is the story. Is again, there's nothing bad about it. It's not a bad story. It does a kind of familiar story, but it adds unique character and executed very, very well. And anytime you execute even the most generic of stories excellently, it's still good.
Yes. Execution is far more important than ideas.
Yeah, originality. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't... That, well put.
Well, a very good friend of mine shared that with me once. You know her. I won't mention her name.
Okay.
But, yeah.
It's true. And, again, his artwork is fabulous.
The most fabulous.
So, anything else you want to add to this, Eric?
I don't think so. I adore Dave Stevens. Even to this day, I'm saddened by the fact that he has died.
Yeah, early death.
You would do well to you, listener, would do well to experience the things that he's done, and this is his iconic work. If you can't shell out for a big hardbound art book of his, this would be the thing to get. $6, and you can learn about, I think, one of the most important artists that a lot of people overlook. You know? He's died too young.
Yeah, it really is tragic that we didn't get more from him.
Absolutely.
But that is The Rock Tier by Dave Stevens. $6 on Comixology. And you get a lot for $6 there.
Yeah,
I mean, that Batman Black and White book, that's $5. This Rock Tier, $6. You get 5 times the amount of story and timeless art.
Yeah. It's delightful.
Great. So, go seek it out. So, that is it for Nerd Boy Book Club. We have one more segment this week.
What's happening?
Eric,
I'm terrified,
is going to be subjected one more time, yet again, to the Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. And if I do say so myself, I got some good, nice pickings. If you're unfamiliar with this segment, it's very simple. I peruse Brian Lee O'Malley's Twitter feed, Brian Lee O'Malley of Scott Pilgrim fame. I will pick 3 tweets that he actually wrote in the past week, and then I, myself, will write one in my best Brian Lee O'Malley Twitter voice. I will read them at a random order to Eric, and he will try and deduce which one is mine and which one doesn't belong among the others. He has gotten, the last one was his first victory.
Mm-hmm.
Can he maintain that streak? Or will I win again? You ready, Eric?
Ready as I'll ever be, kiddo.
Okay. Number 1. I just ate so much almond butter. That must have been like 100 dead almonds. You can hear him typing, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2. GTA 5 is almost as killing as GTA 4. Just right amount killing. Number 3. One of my necks hurt. And
Jesus, fuck.
You ready, really? Ready for the last one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Instead of no parking, I want signs to say zero parkings. So, here we go. I'm going to listen, read them once again for Eric and for the listener's benefit. I just ate so much almond butter, that must have been like 100 dead almonds. Number 2, GTA 5 is almost as killing as GTA 4. Just right amount killing. Number 3, one of my necks hurt. And number 4, instead of no parking, I want signs to say zero parkings. You like those, Eric?
No. I really don't. I don't like these.
Just keep in mind, 3 of those I didn't make up.
I know.
It's the same guy who wrote Scott Pilgrim about do you think you have an answer here?
This is a very tough one.
I thought it was going to be a tough one.
It is not standing. It is not really leaping out to me.
I tried to be a little bit more shadowy this time. I thought I was a little bit too obtuse in the last one.
You are obtuse.
I know.
You cannot help it.
I understand that. Almond butter, GTA, next, parking. Those are your choices. What is your answer?
You're going to have to give me a second.
Okay.
I'm really milling it over.
Here.
That doesn't really help. That does the opposite.
I'm not trying to be helpful.
Well, I know you're trying to be a dick.
I am your enemy.
You're doing exactly what you're trying to do. So
I am your enemy in this endeavor.
I'm going to mute you.
Aww.
I'm going dark.
No.
I'll be back in 20 minutes after I read his Twitter feed.
Fuck you.
I'm going to go with zero parkings.
Is that your final answer?
Final answer.
Incorrect.
Which one was it?
GTA 5 is almost as killing as GTA 4. Just right amount killing.
Jesus.
That is my creation.
That's inspired. That.
Well, he was talking about GTA in his feed. He did not write anything really interesting about it. So I was like, well, I'll use that as inspiration.
Well done, sir.
But those other 3 are all him.
Yeah, I know. I think
the no parking one is the one that Ken picked.
I'm so deflated. I don't even want to ask who Ken is. That's how I feel right now.
You had the victory, and then now you're back on. All you can do is hope next time you'll get it next time. That's all you can hope for.
All I can hope is that this man grows a fucking brain.
I'm not sure I think he's pretty much as far along as he's going to get.
Maybe so.
So, folks, that was the Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz. Eric was unfortunately unsuccessful.
Another horrible loss.
So, folks, that is the end of that segment and, unfortunately, the end of this episode.
Yeah, now I'm really sad.
Now we're both very sad.
One of my necks hurt.
One of my only neck hurts.
Man.
Still.
Man.
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 But we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes. Search for Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You'll find us, only us. Subscribe. Please leave reviews. We really appreciate every single one we get. It helps us get more listeners. If you like us, please tell your friends. Tell like-minded individuals about us. You know, we would appreciate that as well. We're also on Tumblr. I'm putting stuff up there all the time. It's handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. Also on the Facebook. If you're a Facebook fiend, we're facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. I'm making a concerted effort to put links up on that as well. So you can get your, you know, I think I put, you know, interesting comic news I put up there. So if you want something that is something that add to your Facebook feed, a little bit more comic booky, like us. Appreciate it. I'm on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. I am also on Tumblr at the same name. I've also started a website, new one, that's a sister project, this, whyilovecomicbooks.com. By the time you hear this, the second of my articles will be up. I would appreciate it if you check it out. Eric, where can they find your stuff online?
You can find my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com, and you can find a collection of many of the things I get up to at ericzgoodnight.com, and you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example. That's spelled M-R Bad Example.
All right, folks. Until next time, vaya con Dios.
Rock and roll.
Hey, folks, we forgot to mention that next week we will be reading Habibi by Craig Thompson. So give you a heads up. Check it out beforehand and you can read along with us. Later.